RadioRadio.com.
Yeah.
My name is Mad Max, and I approve this message.
DJ Max Heat, Conscious Thoughts, Conscious Entertainment LLC, ConsciousEntertainmentRadio.com, ConsciousEntertainment.us, and .com, RealHotChat.com, RealHotChat.com, RealHotChat, MuseArtWorld.org. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all over, Blogger, Onzi, everybody out there know me. This is Conscious Entertainment, DJ Max Heat.
Hello.
All right. How you doing today, Mr. Martell?
Very good, Mike. Pleasure.
Get moving right along. Now, right now, I'm speaking with Vinny Martell. And, Vinny, you're from the particular group Vanilla Fudge, is that correct?
Yes, that's right, Vanilla Fudge.
And you guys are have been performing and basically recording for a very long time before I even got into music. I read that you originally started off, you know, because your family was musicians of some sort, and it kind of just inspired you to pick up some instrument. But they said when you went to the Navy is when you found your niche for performing?
Yeah, to some degree. What happened was I had taken lessons as a child because my mother played mandolin and guitar. My grandfather played mandolin. My father played violin and guitar, and everybody in the family seemed to, as I was growing up, played music. So I just got used to it from a very early age. Christmas or any of these get-togethers, a lot of music around, and I started very early, so I had to take lessons. And my family, I'm Italian. My family, you had to take lessons. You didn't have a choice. what happened is when I went into the Navy, and the Beatles had come out, and there was this kind of stuff happening, and I was able to play whatever I heard because of all the lessons I had. I was able to have a good ear. So I realized that in the Navy, I ended up getting a little group together. And when I got out of the Navy, I was offered a couple of jobs outside the base, NOB, Naval Operations Base in Norfolk, Virginia, to play with a band out there.
Now, the group, the Pigeons, when did the Pigeons start?
The Pigeons started in 1966. And how that started is that I got out of the Navy and my folks were moving to Florida just as I got out of the Navy. So I went down to Florida with them. And I got into a couple of different bands down there, and I was playing music down in Florida in different situations. And then I came back up to New York, I guess maybe a year or 2 years later.
Yes.
And I got... I got it. Must have been maybe let's say 65 or so. I'm back in New York, I went down to the Union Hall. I had some cards made. The Union Hall was Local 802, Musicians Union, New York City, at the Roseland Ballroom. It's a big famous ballroom in 52nd Street. And I had these cards made, and I was handing them out to different musicians there and agents, and I ran into one agent there that also handed me a card of a band that he knew that needed a guitarist. So we exchanged cards, and then maybe 2 days later I got a call from a fellow named Joey Brennan, who was a drummer in this band. Rick Martin and the Showmen was the band that they were just leaving, and they needed a guitar player. It was Mark Stein from the later Vanilla Fudge and Tim Bogert and Joey Brennan. So they called me up, and they picked me up from Jersey. They came into the Bronx, picked me up at my folks' house where I was staying again. Went out to Tim Bogert's porch where they had just Mark had just bought a B3 organ, a brand new B3 organ. I think before that he was playing an M100 or something, a different model. And we did a jam session. It sounded good. I was, you know, tight on what I had been doing down in Florida. I was doing a lot of R&B and just a lot of different things. And they were a lot into R&B also, and they were tight having been a band. So it clicked, and we realized that we could, you know, do something together. So that what happened is we started playing around a little bit, and we ran into a fella named Jeff Barry, who is somewhat of a big mogul in the music business.
Yeah.
And he gave us the name The Pigeons. We also recorded with Luther Dixon, another famous producer, and also Charlie and Inez Fox. And the record label, was called Scepter, I believe. Records. So we have an album, a Pigeons album. But what happened is that they didn't really push it because to the degree that they could have, because they would do that back in those days. They would record you and they would slowly make their way around the business with it. But once a little time went by and we got the Vanilla Fudge together and that came out, then the people from the Pigeons album realized that they could push that. So then they released the Pigeons album after that. And that's after we got Carmine.
Now, the group name change. You know, I love that name, Vanilla Fudge. I think it's so catchy. So it stands out. It really grabs attention. Why the name change for the group, and what was the reason behind that?
Well, it was a couple of reasons. First of all, the Pigeons, we weren't all that hip on the name, the Pigeons, but the fella that gave it to us, Jeff Barry, he was a big mogul in the business, we called the Pigeons, so we went along with it. We got outfits, but we didn't really want it that hip on it, number one. Number two, when we went with Atlantic, we went with that on the Atco label, which was Atlantic, one of their subsidiaries. The president of Atlantic, Ahmet Erdogan, very famous record executive who has since passed away, but he also didn't like the Pigeons name and wanted us to change it. So we were toying with a different name for quite a bit, and we had quite a few options on the table. And the reason we ended up going with the name is that we were also, let me mention this point, we ran into a talent agent that so to speak, discovered us to some degree, you could say that.
Right.
I can give you the backups on that. What happened was we used to play at this place called the Choo Choo Club in Garfield, New Jersey. And it's where the Rascals had started. And the Vagrants was a very big New York unsigned group at the time, with Leslie West from Mountain was the guitarist from that group. A talent agent named Shelley Finkel came out, and we would back up these different R&B groups, usually the girl groups on it, like let's say a Tuesday night or something, Martha and the Vandellas, or that type of the Shirelles, maybe they'd come out and we would be the backup band. They would show up with maybe a bass player or a guitar player and a chord charts. They'd hand out and we would back them up on their show. So this talent agency came out to see one of these groups, and he saw us. And between the people and the bartender, who was a very well-known guy, Sal, at the place, and Mark Stein's father, they realized that let's talk to this agent. And we were taking a break, and we were thinking of the name, and what other name could we go with? We wanted to change it from the Pigeons. And one of the other groups that was going to be playing there, one of the nights that we were going to be playing there, was going to open for us or whatever it was. There was a girl in the band, and I believe that the name of the band was The Unspoken Word. That was the name of the hub band. And she came in, and she was eating ice cream. She was eating an ice cream cone or something. And so she heard us talking about a name change. We were talking with some of the people that were in the club that worked there, that owned it. And she mentioned, when she heard that, she said, "What about Vanilla Fudge?" Well, she's eating the ice cream. And we all stood there looking around, and And thinking about it, because what happened is her grandfather had, that was her nickname when she was a child, was Vanilla Fudge. Oh, okay. Her grandfather called her that. And I don't know if she was eating Vanilla Fudge ice cream at the time, but all I know is when she said it, nobody shot it down. Up until then, every name that came up, somebody would shoot it down for one reason or another who didn't like something about it. So then we started saying, wow, it's like a blue-eyed soul thing. I mean, everybody was into the R&B. We liked that whole a feel of what was happening in the R&B field. And so it just kind of clicked, and it stuck long enough for us to say, wow, this might be cool. And everybody started saying, hey, that's cool. So that's kind of what we had. And then when Atlantic wanted us to have a name change, so that's kind of how that came about.
Awesome. You guys, you mentioned Long Island, and I saw that you were inducted into the Hall of Fame of Long Island.
Yes, we were inducted into the Hall of Fame of in Long Island. Yes, that was, let me see, in 2006. And we had quite a few people that were also inducted into it. It was, we had, well, first of all, Shadow Morton, our producer.
Wow.
Then we had, Billy Joel was inducted into this one at the same time when we were in 06. Joan Jett, Ari Chapin, George Gershwin, Twisted Sister, Pete Christmas, and a whole bunch of others. That so it was really quite a night. They flew up the guys from, Mark was coming up from Florida, Carmine was out from California. They had a big red car thing. They had a limo. We all pulled up in the limo, and you know, sort of everybody. It was like something in a movie opening, a big thing in Hollywood. I mean, there was people. This is in Long Island, Patchogue, Long Island, and they have a theater that it looked, when you pulled up, it was like being in Hollywood. There was people, barricades, cops, flash bulbs going off. Get out of the car! I'm telling you. It was like really something, and it was a big deal night they had.
All right, man. I read that you toured with the group Led Zeppelin before they became the big name that they are. Can you tell me that experience, how that was like?
Right. It first started out that we did a gig in Seattle, Washington with Jimmy Page when he was in the Yardbirds. And I don't know if it was that time or what, but our manager got to know their manager, Peter Grant. And I guess they were planning in England to push his next big project, which later became Led Zeppelin. So he had made friends with them, and we knew Jimmy from Seattle a little bit when we did that gig. What happened is when Zeppelin came out and they wanted to push them in the States, they got a hold of us, because at this point now our managers had started something, Concerts East. And before Concerts East, there was a Concerts West that had a couple of fellas, big promoters from the West Coast. And we got on that tour. And what happened is that they needed, get noticed. So we had them open for us. So Led Zeppelin did their whole first tour in the United States, opening for Vanilla Fudge on the West Coast.
Wow.
And Canada. And we did some Canada. So that's it. We became friends with them, and you know, we hung out with them a little bit early on. And the Robert Plant, in fact, me and Mark Stein, one time when they first came over, he had a suitcase full of records. And after one of the gigs, we all hung out together, and he was showing us all the records that he brought over. You know, that's before cassettes and all that kind of stuff was out.
Wow.
So, you know, he was showing all the records, and he says on his website, he had put down that Vanilla Fudge was everything that they wanted to be. So that was quite a nice thing
to
hear from them.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Now, you don't get the chance. There's not many people on the earth that can still say that they had a relationship with Jimi Hendrix. I read that you guys befriended each other, and you also did record a song in memory of him of some sort.
Oh, well, what happened with that is Jimi Hendrix, when he started out over here, he had, first, I believe he opened for the Monkees, which was a kind of a mismatch, because the Monkees had like the teeny bopper crowd kind of, and Jimi Hendrix came up and, you know, blew everybody away once he came up. So I think he wanted off the Monkees tour, or they wanted him off. It wasn't correlating, but so he came back with Heir Apparent and the Soft Machine. And our management saw that, you know, Jimi Hendrix was turning everybody upside down over there. So they decided, why don't we put Vanilla Fudge on the tour with them? So they decided to call it the 1-2 Punch with Jimi Hendrix and the Vanilla Fudge around the States. So, yeah, right. So it became a very cool. We ended up doing 13 dates in a row with the great Jimi Hendrix. And so we traveled on the plane with him. You know, we got to know him to some degree, and Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell and all the guys. So we did that. And then also Jimmy used to jam down at the Scene, a club in New York City on 46th Street and 8th Avenue if he was off from gigs. So I got to know him. So I used to go down there. A lot of musicians went down there. It was a jam session that would happen whenever, I guess, it's where all the musicians would always gravitate to. So Jimmy, of course, would gravitate there also when he was in the New York area and when we were in New York. So one time he's down there and he's jamming away, and I'm down there, and Jack Cassidy, I believe, was there and played some bass, and Buddy Miles got up and he was playing. Anyway, and I got there real late. It was, you know, it's open until 4 o'clock in the morning. So everybody's yapping at four. They want to close the club down. And Eddie Kramer, Jimi Hendrix's engineer, is there. And he says, hey, listen, why don't we go down to the record plant? I believe that's 44th Street or 43rd Street. I don't even remember if it's 43rd or 44th now, but I believe it's 44th. Anyway, he says, I got the keys. Let's go down to the record plant and run the machines and do a little recording just for, you know, for the fun.
If you or anyone else you know would like to have their poetry, music featured on the Pro Flow for Show Show, hosted by Mr. Mad Max, check us out, www.maxheat.com. Don't be left out. Don't be the last to know. Spread the word. It's Pro Flow M4 Radio.